Good afternoon. You are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change here in the Dawnland. We explore topics such as restorative justice, restorative practices, decolonization, cultural revival, and more. Our guests are people involved in aspects of truth, healing, and change work. This program is offered in an effort to share, inspire, and inform. Dawnland Signals is a collaboration of Wabanaki Reach and WERU-FM. I am your co-host, Nick Baer.
And I am your co-host, Nolan Altvader. Thank you all for tuning in with us this evening. I hope everyone has been enjoying your springtime as we move closer and closer to the summer solstice here in Wabanakik. Today on Dawnland Signals, we are joined by Damon Gallipo. How have you been, Damon?
Fabulous. How you doing?
Not bad, not bad. Pleasure to have you. Damon is here with us to have a conversation about his relationship to canoeing and the waterways here in what is now Maine as a Wabanaki person. He's a good friend of mine, whom I've had the pleasure of getting out on the water with here and there, and I know that, you know, not only is he strong in a canoe, but also really lives and take seriously the values and responsibilities that comes with such a role within our communities. So really excited for this chance to sit down and talk with him. Before we do that, I'm gonna ask my brother Nick here to lead us in a land appreciation.
Uh-huh. All right. So spring has taken over here in Wabanaki territory, and I am thankful for another beautiful season. Fiddleheads on the island sprouting quickly and disappearing just as fast. The slowing currents in our rivers and streams give us glimpses of the warming water that was iced and covered with snow only a few weeks ago, it seems. The turns of our season happen so rapidly, it feels like you miss it if you close your eyes for too long. Growing up in my community on Indian Island, I don't remember every spring. I can tell you that everyone has felt hopeful, though. Every spring, I feel newer. It is the true new year for our people and the awakening of our Mother Earth. It makes me curious about how our ancestors viewed things like this, and did they have the same kind of feelings around this time of year? Were they optimistic? Were they thinking this new season will bring them to a new fishing spot that will have their boats and bellies full? Will it be this new season that renews a love for something they grew up doing and forgot how to enjoy? Were my ancestors weird like me and thinking this way back then too? I hope so. Let us be proud of where our seeds were planted and the roots that connect us to our past relations and their knowledge systems. Let us be a support for all people and living things. We have a responsibility to provide spaces for voices of decolonization. It is an honor to be a part of Dawnland Signals, and I am humbled by the opportunity to connect with my Wabanaki relatives in a new way that only could have been in my ancestors' wildest dreams. Psidegeg Nidwi Nudman Gdakmiguk. Everything I need, I get from the earth. Kchi Williwun Ndelbemwa. Thank you so much, all my relations.
Williwun, Nick. All right. Okay, Damon. I want to kick it over to you, first to let you introduce yourself as you see fit, and maybe start off with how you developed your interest in canoeing. Did you start at a young age?
Yeah, sort of. I started at 13.
Okay, nice. Yeah, and do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Damon Gallipo. I'm from Penobscot Nation. I'm Eel Clan. I grew up on Indian Island. That's about it.
You said you started at 13?
Yes.
Yeah, and is this something you just saw a boat and got in, or?
I want to get into something before that. So, you know, growing up on Indian Island, I didn't spend too much time on the water when I was younger because, when I was younger, I would always bike around the neighborhood, and there's this park, J.J. Love Park, and it's named after a boy who died in the river, before my time. And I never knew him, obviously, but I always thought of him. Mm. So that always kept me away from the river. I was always kind of cautious. You know, I didn't learn to swim until I was much older. So it was that apprehension that kind of kept me away from it. But it was only down the road when I finally actually got connected with the river, and that was at a summer school summer program at Indian Island School, Roger Paul took us out. And that was my first time canoeing with Roger Paul. And I remember, like, when we got on the boat, we, like, the way the canoe felt, the way it propelled, it felt like it was going so fast, a lot faster than how I thought it would go. And he taught me how to do a draw stroke and feeling how, like, I could pull the boat and it would move over to the left like that was really cool. And I remember, every day after that, pestering Roger to take me out. And it wasn't until, like, the following year that I got really involved with canoeing.
Mm. Yeah. Your story is reminding me of, first and foremost, the waters here, all water, powerful, and how a lot of our stories really, our oral stories kind of teach that power in a way that's really, it's not like scaring children, but it is teaching kind of that ethic of respect for the power that she carries.
Absolutely.
And I kind of want to, talk about this canoeing and canoe making and canoe culture in the context of our histories and who we are as Penobscot and Wabanaki peoples. Our canoes and waterways not only provided us with material survival and connection, but also are very much a part of our identity and what it means to be indigenous to these homelands in Wabanakik. And I'm wondering, how do you understand this historic significance, and how does it show up in your relationship to canoeing today?
Okay, so I didn't really establish, like, my understanding until relatively recently. Like, I've been guiding for the past 5 years, and this past 5 years I've really learned a lot about, like, the history. But, I think of it this way, like, the reason we're still here and have, like, unceded lands to this day is in large part due to the canoe, to get across the territory, but also, like, both, militarily speaking, the colonists couldn't uproot us out of this territory because it was hard to navigate. They couldn't take their whaling boats up these, like, really steep streams, and we were able to, like, outmaneuver them and ambush them and raid them, and because of that, why we still have our river islands, and I take great pride in that. I think the town of York is made out of brick today because it was burned down by Madakawando or Mauhegan back in, like, 1672 or 73 or something like that, which is, like, crazy to think about. Dude, like, well, there's some crazy stories about, like, the raids they used to do back in the day, and especially via canoe. Like, on the St. George stream, there used to be a fort there, but during the spring when the ice would break up, there was a raid that happened where all these canoes descended down, right? Mm-hmm. And, as soon as the raid started, it was over. And just like that, they referred to the raid as a snowball because they came down the ice and they exploded and they went everywhere else, and they got away like that. So there's lots of stories, lots of history that, I think about. And whenever I work with the kids too, and I don't tell them, like, that sort of stuff per se, but, like, I tell them, like, this is important. It goes deeper, much deeper than, how we really see it at the surface level.
Yeah, and, talking about these canoes, you mentioned some, was it Madakawando? Yeah, and kind of like our skills as not only paddling, but could you say more about, like, more of the ability to make canoes as well?
I think so. It's not everyone made canoes back in the day, so it was very guarded information. So there were, canoe makers, and I've helped out on some canoes. I've never really made a canoe. But I've seen the process, and it's, nowadays it's like there's a renaissance of canoe building. You have all these different projects going on, and it's really empowering to see that we, that's our survival. That's us, refusing to be, put down. So it's strength.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And, thinking of, we're in the Reach office here in what's now Old Town, and right down the road is this funny place called Old Town Canoe. Did you want to, like, share kind of, like, kind of your perspective on that, and kind of, them really extracting that knowledge from, our abilities for canoe construction, and sort of, how do you view that?
Okay, so Old Town Canoe. It was initially like started with the at the direction of and the instruction of Penobscot and Wabanaki canoe builders. So that's where they got their knowledge. And in fact, the Penobscot, their model, the Penobscot, was designed off the Penobscot birch bark canoe, which is an excellent boat. The older ones that Old Town used to make out of Royal X are much better than the boats they make today. A lot heavier. I can't stand Old Town canoes nowadays. They're just they're tubs and they're really ugly and they're really expensive for what they are. And yeah, I used to work at Old Town Canoe, and like it was kind of funny because I remember my I worked at the factory store, and my boss said he was going on a fishing trip, right? And he had gone for 2 weeks. 2 weeks goes by, never comes back, and it's just me and a bunch of the other kids from the high school team, because there was we were on a high school canoe team, and Old Town Canoe came to the team and like, hey, you guys want some jobs? And yeah, it was just like a few of us from the high school team running the factory store, and
no boss.
I got kind of resentful after that. I was like, I don't want to work here. So
naturally,
I feel like a lot of people don't think of that when they're stepping into an Old Town Canoe and like really recognize where that knowledge of canoe making comes from.
Because
the
original framework was it was designed by a Penobscot canoe builder, so
and it's viewed as recreation. That's how they view canoeing. It's very how you see it. I don't know, it's not very deep, it's very surface level.
And what is like, because I think many things for Wabanaki people, that involves kind of being on the waters or being out in the lands, similar to like, maybe even like hiking or something like that. It's not really recreational to us. And with that, what is canoeing to you as a Wabanaki person?
Healing. Canoeing is healing. I don't know the science behind it, but I know that when you're on the water, it does a lot of things for your mental health. Also, like your physical health, it's just I'm out on the water nearly every day, and being out on the water just feels right. And I didn't really understand that when I was a kid, but I felt it. I had that feeling, and it took me until I was like 17 or 18 to really realize what it was and what it meant, and how important that was for me. So, yeah, healing.
Yeah, definitely a great way to be outside and be connected to your homelands and, to people. And kind of want to go back to this topic of the history of Maine sort of like really interrupting our relationships to not only our canoe knowledge from extracting it and then capitalizing it through manufacturing our canoes. But also to interrupting our waterways and our ability to connect, as you were saying, to our places in that healthy and healing way. How do you, what other ways has sort of our relationship to water has been sort of interrupted historically here in our homelands?
So first you had the sawmills, right? You had log drives, millions of logs going downriver. And that really prevented us from canoeing. And then, so after the sawmills closed, and you had the paper mills open, and then that was just discharging so many pollutants and making the river very unwell, and poisoning us, really. And you also have the dams. So you have these like three factors that really poisoned our lifeblood, because that's really what these waters are, Because these waters, that's how we lived, that's how we've always been here. So the fact that those industrial factors came into play, it really did throw a wrench in everything. But yeah, I think that's that.
And kind of like, I know outside of our time here in the studio, we've done some organizing and some work around Juniper Ridge Landfill. Do you notice any kind of like impacts while you're out in the water in this area from that?
I can feel it. I can definitely feel it. If you're driving down south on I-95, you can see it growing. Like I've been doing field work. I'll go up to Skaunis, Madame Skaunis, and I'll come back down. And I feel like over the years, you've seen it getting taller and taller. And the fact that Juniper Ridge is in a wetland on the biggest tributary in Maine is insane to me. And actually, so I coached the canoe team on Indian Island, and we were out for a paddle one day, and I'm always on the kids about hydrating, like, you know, like, make sure you bring your water, sunscreen, I'm always on it, but they were out of water, and I was like, okay, all right, and they're like, I'm gonna drink the river, and I'm like, no, you're not, don't do that, and they thought I was joking, too. I was like, no, dude, like, don't do that, and they were like, why, and I had to explain to them, like, the decades of pollution, and also the fact that, you know, it was a teaching moment, specifically about Juniper Ridge, and, you know, I could see in that moment that it kind of it connected, and, you know, they understood it. They understood it then, and, you know, I think that, like, my hope is with telling them that, you know, I was in their situation, their position years ago on the canoe team, and I know what that did for me. And I can see it doing the exact same thing for them. And I'd like to hope that with informing them and with them developing more of a connection, that they might pursue, say, a career in science or something that could benefit the community. And that's actually what I do a lot of work with, as I work a lot with the youth, specifically at WAIS, Wabanaki Youth in Science, in hopes to get tribal youth into these career fields that will, you know, benefit the tribes.
Yeah, could you expand a little bit more about your work with the youth canoe team? Like, what have you been doing lately?
So lately, we don't start the canoe team until the summertime. However, my cousin Abemazim and I, we were educators for WAIS, so we will go do after-school programming. And we've been canoeing with after-school programming at Indian Island the past few weeks since the water's been calming down and it's getting warmer. Nice. So we've been getting them out. But as the summer approaches, that's when Bem and I really step into canoe coach mode. And we, you know, we take about a dozen kids out each time. And we're going to have to, this year it's going to be a little different, where we're going to have more of like the beginners. And then we're going to have another time where we go out later in the day where we get the more
seasoned,
yeah,
kids.
The kids who are really into racing, and that's I guess how we're gonna kind of like foster the next generation of paddlers. Mm-hmm. like we bring like, who do we bring out? Do we bring Bronson out? I think we bring Bronson out.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he's gone out with you guys.
Yeah, Andy and all those kids. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we Bem and I are now the coaches. We grew up with the canoe team, and we've learned so much from so many coaches, and I think that, you know, it's I like to think of it this way, right? We were given something, and it's the way we should move, I think, as a people is returning the land or returning what we were given better than how we received it. So that's the way I think about canoe coaching, right? Is I've had so many coaches, you know, Chip Loring, John Neptune, Mark Ranko, Barry Dana, Jeff Owen, just to name a few, and I think that, you know, now we have all this information that we were given, and we can give it all to them like that, because, you know, we've been trickle fed all this information throughout the years. Mm-hmm. Of like canoe technique, how to ride wakes, how to read the water, how to paddle through white water, different safety like maneuvers, different strokes, and all of that has kind of led us to, like, I guess view the river in a particular light, or like in a different way than how we initially started. So I'm very grateful that I'm in this position, because, you know, we're giving the youth our all, you know, and I'm these kids are a lot younger than how we were, and I think that, you know, since we were given all that information over the years, these kids are gonna be like so good. They're gonna be killing it all the whitewater races, at the whitewater nationals, at the flatwater nationals. So
I wanna follow up on the youth canoe team. I think you guys had a pretty successful year last year. But before we get into that conversation, I just want to take a moment to remind our listeners that you are tuning in to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. I am co-host Nolan Altvater, along with my good neat dub, Nick Baer. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. And today we are having a conversation about the historic and contemporary importance of canoeing to the Wabanaki people through a conversation with Damon Gallipo and his relationship to canoeing and the waterways across our homelands here in what is now Maine. Okay, so you mentioned you kind of now being in your kind of like mentor or teacher role. How old are you? You're
I'm 24.
24, yeah. So relatively, like, I think that's still in the classification of youth for a lot of Wabanaki programming and organizations. So it's really great that, you know, we're already having like people around your age stepping into these mentor and teaching spots. You're talking about kind of like your relationship to the youth team, and how do you guys normally do? I feel like you had a pretty successful year last year.
So we do really well, and that's because the youth program, the Indian Island Canoe Club, has excellent boats, excellent like paddles. We have the best equipment, and I think that's what the youth deserve. Mm. And we've also had the best coaches. So when they went to, I didn't go with them, but they went to the Flower Nationals. Where was that? That was in, well, I'm blanking, but
24 maybe, because I feel like, was Carmelo on that team?
Like 2024?
Yeah.
Oh no, they went. They went to, I'm trying to think of the state they went to.
Oh.
But they did really well. They did really well, and Ben was there holding it down as the head coach with John Neptune, and I think they came back really with a lot of wind in their sails, you know. And working up to that on the workup, really coaching them was so fun, especially like some of those kids, like this kid named Sonny, like his if you know Sonny, you know it's just, he's a very smiley kid who's very enthusiastic, and he said he's the funniest kid. And these they did really well. We did a lot of races beforehand at the Orno Thursday night paddle series, and I remember taking Sonny in his first canoe race, and he was I remember this very like vividly. I was telling him to like really rotate and reach, and you know he would do that, and at the end he was like, let's go. And like later that year, his mom had sent me a paper that he wrote about that race, and he wrote it for school.
Wow.
And just seeing his perspective and how he even included like the let's go at the finish was really funny. Really well, and I don't know, that's just how I know it's like the work we're doing is like successful. Like
absolutely.
Like seeing how they like write about it, how they talk about it, the way their faces light up. It's like, you know, I tell them too, it's not about racing. It's really not about that. It's it's just about getting out with each other, getting on the water, and it's that connection. Like, you know, it's really not about racing, and it just happens to be like the case. If you know, if you really love it so much and you know, put your heart into it, you're just gonna win races.
Mm. And they do.
They do.
And they do.
It's a long there's a long history of that. Like
yeah.
Like the Kanduskeg, for instance, they say it was made in the 60s or established in the 60s, which I disagree. There was, 1865, 10 Penobscots and 5 birch bark canoes raced down the Kanduskeg. And this was right after, I'm not sure which war that was, but they were named after like different generals, which was kind of an interesting part of the story. But there's a journal entry from a man in Bangor talking about how the bridges were lined with dozens of people, and there were spectators all around, and after the race they turned around and paddled back up the Kanduskeg and went home, you know. You know, so
yeah,
put on a show and then went back.
I didn't know the history like that. I didn't know that, you know, we were canoe racing. I thought it was just some niche thing that we were doing, you know, in our community.
Yeah.
But there's newspaper clippings of races down like in Connecticut and Portland, you know, racing against like, you know, different tribes. Which is like super cool to think about, and the fact that we're still doing that today is like you know, super empowering.
Yeah, and even around MDI, like the races around the island there.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, and actually, before sort of you know, earlier maps really not showing Soam Sound, that little kind of like, I like to think of MDI that looks like a pair of lungs, and sort of like in the middle of there were Soam Sound. a lot of people would actually take a shortcut through there and cut through and put back in the water.
That's traditional, you know? Like, that's how we would do it. Like, the port, like we would portage. That's how we moved around the territory.
That's not
like,
cheating, that's traditional.
No,
right?
That is canoeing. Like, half of canoeing is carrying the boat, you know? Yeah. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a canoe club down in MDI where there was like about 300 or so like vacationers that would come down and they'd learn from these Wabanaki guides and they would buy birch bark canoes and they'd buy their paddles and they would be coached by the Wabanaki people there, and there would be races every summer.
Yeah, and like that's the thing too, like in thinking of the names and the people that dominant history remembers, like you really gotta, I feel like, dig for that information on like our abilities to really win these canoe races. Yet, you know, the names of of the guides of like Thoreau or Teddy Roosevelt and the canoe makers and guides who built a relationship with there are like really remembered in Maine's history. So it's funny to see like, you know, this difference in like, A, who's choosing to remember in history, who gets remembered.
You have to really dig for that stuff, yeah. Man. It's, you know, a lot of this history I didn't know growing up, and it's kind of a shame. So that's why it's like I'm trying to, you know, read up all I can. You know, there's some really good books out here that are coming out. And, you know, a lot of information, too, is stuff you have to dig through, journal entries from the Jesuits or what have you. So it's all stuff you have to really pick through and see through their kind of colonial mind. And how they wrote it. So,
yeah, they were our number one fans. They couldn't stop writing
something
about
like
us.
That. Yeah.
you've really carried on this tradition, if you will. Of I feel like every time I see the leaderboard for canoe races, I always see either you or some other Penobscot person in first place. You know, especially on the Kanduskeg. How do you approach sort of like, you know, preparing and kind of like navigating, experiencing kind of like the canoe race season out here? And do you have any like kind of favorites that you like?
Yeah, so with preparing, I definitely like to train. I do a lot of calisthenics, and I try to run, and it really comes down to time in the boat. Like if you want to be a good canoeer, you just gotta get in the boat and just paddle, and that's really what you know 90% of it is. And I think my favorite stream to paddle, like my favorite race, honestly, is probably the Kanduskeg because of like my family ties to that stream. The Neptune family kind of kicked it around there. It's the place where you would, what's it called? Like the place of the eel weir.
Yep.
And as I'm a member of the eel clan, I take that, like, I don't know. I take that race very seriously. But at the same time, I don't. It's like, I'm just having fun out there.
Yeah.
And I love talking to people, and I love, it's really all about just running your lines really well. Like, okay, I'm gonna enter this rapid over here, and I'm gonna cut across, I'm gonna do a draw right here, and then I'm gonna put on the power, and then I'm gonna, like, eddy out over here, or I'm gonna, like, pass this person on this side and ride their wake or something like that. So there's a lot of reading the water and strategy there, which is really fun. Another stream that I like is the Sourdough. That's a really good one. It's the place of descending ledges. It's probably one of the most extreme whitewater canoe races around here, which is, you know, it says a lot because there's a lot of whitewater. There's a lot of whitewater around here, and that's a...
When does that one fall on, too, like as far as the season goes?
I think it's like... April, like 13th, usually is.
So the water is still pretty cold. Right?
Yeah, I've swam there quite a few times, and it's not very fun. But I remember like swimming there with Bem one time at the end of one of the bigger rapids, and it caught us off guard. And I just remember like hearing Bem trying to catch his breath, and I remember being like, I'm like, dude, get the boat,
get out of the water, bro.
Yeah, like come on. We're both in the stream floating. I don't know. There's so many amazing streams, and you can definitely feel that connection, and it's all in the place names too. Like the Sourdough, that ending, the cook denotes the paddle ability, right? So you hear like Nesauda hunk. hunk means like you don't want to paddle that. Like, stay away. You want to there's a portage trail around that.
Yeah.
And that's another thing too is like the portage trails. Like there was a like back in the day there were portage trails everywhere. So can you travel? It was so easy to get around.
Yeah.
So you know it's portages are fun.
Yeah. Similar with Passamaquoddy place names. You know, a lot of people say it's like it's the perspective that you have from a canoe. Like how you see the land from the canoe or how you travel the land using the canoe. Because, like, that's what, you know, that's what our life ways and worlds really revolved around. Like, whether it was from, obviously, traveling, getting from A to B, but also, like, our connections to each other as Wabanaki people. Like, our waterways really being the veins that, like, connect us together as people. And then it also goes into like our worldview, like what you were just sharing, like with the place names and how we see and understand place and whether or not to canoe there, and then telling the settlers to canoe there because you're not supposed to canoe there. It's just really, really ingrained in who we are over, you know, generations and generations of experience. And I'm wondering, like, you mentioned you did tourism, correct?
Yeah, I do a lot of
like
guiding.
Some guiding.
Yeah.
How do you balance that? You know what I mean? Of like, you know, obviously, like, it's a form of having some sort of, you know, income or experience in the present day as a Wabanaki person, but it's also like obviously you're intimately tied to these places. So does that shape your kind of like how you do guides on the canoe?
It's a very old profession. It goes way back to when, you know, first contact was established, even further back. So it's there's definitely a lot of pride in that. And the word tourism or the cultural tourism, I really despise that term. Mm. It's like we're marketing our culture, you know, and we're not like returning it to where it should be. You know, there's a, because I've been guiding and I definitely see the value in it and why it's called that and why we do it. However, I think that there's a lot of people that are forgotten. Like we have people in our communities that don't get out on the water and that bothers me. So it's really, I'm taking my guide license. I'm really trying to get more people out without like charging them. You know, it's kind of that barrier to entry. Canoeing is hard to get into if you're not very able to move a canoe or let alone if you know how to like read or paddle the water. It's I feel like it's my responsibility to return what was given to me, in that, you know, bringing people out who otherwise wouldn't be able to get out. So that's kind of like the way I've been looking at it lately. And yeah, I definitely get like, I make a living off of it, or at least for the most part I try. But it's a, yeah, I don't know. I just, it's really fulfilling to get out in the water with people in a way, like in a professional setting where I'm like the one that, you know, any question that you have about reading the water, how to paddle, like I want to be able to make you comfortable. I want to help you become proficient in then some. So that's kind of the way I think about it, like returning it.
Yeah, Damon's always the one, like when he mentioned like the Wabanaki Youth and Science Program, I feel like all of our like science camps, our youth camps, we always, you know, we're always out in the water with them. And Damon's usually always there doing the instruction before we get out there teaching. Because often, like, we even have, like, visitors from, I think the last time that I was out in the water with you in Waze was through the Haudenosaunee, when they came and visit us.
That was so cool. Yeah. That was historic right there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you just being the one preparing everyone and teaching everyone how to navigate the water there. Yeah, it's always such a great time being out there. And I know we've kind of like focused a lot on your identity and relationship to canoeing and be on the water. But, you know, what else do you do outside of a boat?
So I kind of touched on it earlier, but my full-time job, I'm what's called the forestry lead for Wabanaki Youth and Science. So I do a lot of field work for tribal governments, specifically like forestry departments. Mm-hmm. So right now we're doing a lot of emerald ash borer work, so protecting our ash, trying to figure out ways how to store our ash. In fact, the other day there was a big gathering of people from all over the Northeast, including a Benedict from Akwesasne. So that was really cool. But my work doesn't specifically stay within forestry, because we're such a small organization. I do a lot of youth engagement, so we'll do after-school programming, like I said before, but trying to engage kids in different cultural activities, like we'll do ash pounding, we'll do drumming, we're trying to do birch bark etching. So over the past month, you know, my job allows me to get out and harvest bark, so we were fortunate enough to get a large amount. So there's different workshops we're trying to put together. Really, aside from canoeing, we're just trying to uplift the culture in so many different ways, because I think we're in a world that's really, you know, as John Trudell said, it's like we're in a world that's like eating our spirit, you know? It's like we really got to protect that. So, and we're very fortunate to have what we have in our culture. So in any way, trying to lift these youth up, because there's so many things that are out to get them, you know? And like, I was one of those youth. I was like, I understand what it was like to, you know, to, I don't know, feel foreign in my own home, you know? And I wasn't until much older until I realized what we really had. So I'm really passionate about just trying to make as many opportunities for these kids. And as much of a pain as these kids can be, like they're great. I love them, you know, but only when they're forced to be there. Only like when I'm in school and they're like, they have to be there. It's like we don't want to listen to you, Damon. Like, right. Get out of here.
But, we'll hang out with you at youth.
Yeah. So I don't know. I do a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I got Clark here too. So Clark takes a lot of, my day, you know. Yeah. He's a Mawaze, the canoe dog.
Yeah. For, listeners, you can't see us, but Clark is Damon's dog. And actually, one of my favorite...
The people's dog.
Sorry. Corrected. For the people.
Almost.
One of my favorite photos that I've taken of you out on the canoe is him doing his, like, signature... What do you call it? The look?
Yeah, the look back? He was, like, looking straight back, like, behind him looking at me in the canoe.
He's a good boy, for sure.
Yeah, his name, Mawaze, I found it in the Penobscot Dictionary. It means he who follows from the shore. However, he doesn't really follow from the shore. Like, I'm usually following him. But it's very, it's that old tradition. Like, you think about Glooskap and his dogs, and, he really embodies that name, you know, Mawaze.
Mawaze?
Mawaze, yep.
And say it again, the...
He who follows from the shore.
Follows from the shore. I've heard Alamus also being like the one that like walks ahead.
As oh, well. Really? Okay.
I could that, you know, Roger Paul, if you're listening, fact checked me on that one. but yeah, I can't remember who I heard that. And it coming from, you know, a Glooskap story. Mm-hmm. Again, like I know you outside of outside of our time here, and I know you as like an artist as well. You know, I feel like you really coming into like visual art in particular, and you know, even just mentioning the birch bark etching, and the actually, do you want to say more about kind of like, yeah, like I know you just were out on the water, particularly for. Looking for some bark to do a workshop here in the community. You want to talk a little bit about your kind of relationship to art and how that shows up in your relationship to water being on the canoe?
Yeah, so I think of curve motifs a lot, like how the life cycle, and really depending on the season too, right? You have, especially this time of year, you know, everything is budding. Mm-hmm. So I like to think about, you know, what's you know, producing fruit or what's producing flowers. So I like to mess around with making curve motifs, and I made one that represents my my family, the eel clan. So in the center of the motif, right, that's the adulthood. That's like the flower, you know, the blossom of life, right? and on either side of the motif, right? So moving from like left to right or right to left, you know, however way you want to interpret it. It's really up to our interpretation. There are two eels. So at the start of the life cycle, you have an eel. At the end, you have an eel. And it's just kind of like the way you can just express yourself. So I think I wish I could show you that. Maybe I'll pull that up later, but it's a...
Maybe we can include that as a part of the form when we submit for the archives.
Yeah, totally.
Be something the audience can check out.
So I'm messing around with motifs a lot. I like to do a lot of carving. Carving is a really prevalent thing in my family. My great-uncle Stanley Neptune carves a lot of root clubs. Mm. My cousin Hugga, he does a lot of carvings too. And
Skegis, shout out.
Yeah. I'm also like, my eyes just lit up because I'm like, oh, we're related.
We're all related. Yeah, that's what I tell the kids. It's like, yeah, we're all related. I'm your cousin. You know. It's like, yeah. So it's like, you know, we have there's a lot of creativity in the families within these communities, and I love seeing the kids tap into that too. Like, I'm trying to get them like their minds turning on the curve motifs. Like, and it is too. Like, you know, it really. I keep going back to the youth, but that's really what matters, you know. It's like everything you say sticks with them, and you know, they'll bring it out.
Yeah.
And whenever they do, it's like, man, that feels good. That's another like sign of success. It's like, that's how you know the work you're doing is good, is when, you know, it comes full circle.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm also in that age of like, you really starting to realize that there's a generation like coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Like really in that transitioning from like youth to like young adults, and I couldn't agree more. Like once you start, it's a like you both like start like, oh no, time is passing, I'm getting old, but it's also like, yeah, so nice to see. And I feel like it's coming at like an even like earlier age too, you know what I mean, like having these opportunities available for youth to really like through the work that you do and a lot of other people do in our communities, like it's really like a resurgence and a growing of who we are. And obviously it's been around for forever, and there's people in the community who have always made sure that this knowledge and identity was mobilized and passed on. But I guess I'm just biased and seeing the generation under us of really like latching onto it. And I feel like also like cultures change, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
We're a changing people. At the same time, we carry these specific core set of values as who we are as Wabanaki people. But they're really, like, making it their own, I feel like, too. And that's been, yeah, really
absolutely
nice to see. Yeah. I do want to take a minute just to remind our audience that you are listening to Dawnland Signals on WERU-FM. I am co-host Nolan Altivator, along with my other co-host, Nick Baer. Dawnland Signals is a monthly talk show where we hold space for critical conversations of truth, healing, and change. Today, we are having a conversation about the historic and contemporary importance of canoeing to the Wabanaki people through a conversation with Damon Gallipo and his relationship to canoeing and the waterways across our homelands in what is now Maine. And I kind of want to, you know, look ahead of what's coming, both, you know, for you, but also, like, where you see kind of, like, this relationship of canoeing and canoe making and being out on the water, and also the health of our water. But kind of just start off with, like, what you have planned for, you know, for the summer.
Getting the kids ready for the Flatwater Nationals, but also getting them kind of... I've been talking to them about getting them into whitewater, and it's been really hard to. It's a lot more... It's a lot more different than flatwater. There's a lot more risk to it, so I'd like to get more youth out into that. But we're still making, you know, baby steps, so really just spending time with the kids. It's a day-by-day thing. There's nothing I have that's, like, really... like any big events, it's really just like ensuring that, you know, they get the best that, you know, we can give them. But where was I going with that? I was going to say something about, it's escaping right now. What was that?
You were talking about the preparing the youth for the Flatwater Nationals.
Yeah, and also talking about guiding too, like because I never realized like that, you know, I could do this for work, and no one ever told me that. So you know, my younger cousin Koa, I think he could be an amazing guide, and he can be a professional. He can go to the Olympics. That's what I tell him. It's like you can go to the Olympics, guys. Like we have a canoe coach, his name's Rod, and he was an Olympian, and he knows high kneels. So it's like we have these people around us that can really like uplift us, and you know, as long as you know we have that drive, we can do anything. And that's what I try to tell them too. It's like you can make this however you want. Like you can make of this whatever you want. So it's just kind of like and I don't know, the world is crazy, so I'm just trying to you know, really put my heart into this and just focus on this.
Yeah, and it shows, you know what I mean? Like,
definitely.
Yeah, definitely shows. Like, again, like looking around us, like who we see, like, you know, doing that work in the communities, and seeing you, and just again, like so many other younger Wabanaki youth coming into these positions, and like that's what's gonna like continue to drive us into the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Maintaining those relationships with each other, and really putting, as you said, like our hearts into it. Yeah, and
the kids recognize that too. They know what's real and what isn't. Like all the people that are in their lives, whether at school or at youth programs or whatever, they know who's trying for them. They know who's pushing for them, and you're making a lasting effect on our youth, Damon.
It means a lot to hear. You know, I've always kind of this work has really kind of pushed me out of my comfort zone. You know, I haven't always like thought like this or what have you. And it's I'm kind of like I used to be like really shy, and I used to be really timid, and you know, I think that doing this work has really like built my confidence, and that's another thing I like to think about with these kids. It's like this stuff will, you know, make you a more confident person, and will, you know, will, yeah.
Would you say the water teaches you?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You can read the water, you can listen to the water. If you just, you know, the water will talk to you, especially if you're. I mean, in like a literal sense, like okay, the bubbles are going here. You want to stay in the bubbles, or like this. There's an eddy here, which like that's on the more like surface level for sure, but definitely like the pain, the tears, the being able to like just kind of like float in the water, you know, just the embrace of that. It's really powerful.
And are you planning on coming on the Ancestors Battle this year?
Yeah, so last year is my first one, and I've been wanting to do that, but with, like, it's hard with scheduling. I'm terrible with, like, my scheduling is horrible. Like, I'm trying to get better and not double booking, but last year I did it, and that was so cool. Being out on the water with, like, what was it, like, 100 canoes or something like that?
90 plus.
Something crazy, which is, like, if you think about it, when was the last time you saw, like, 90 canoes of Wabanaki people, you know, on the water? Like, that is powerful. You know, we,
That was a bad day for a settler back in the day.
That's what I'm saying.
Turn around.
There's so many like different, like I, just saying that, like I just thought of, you know, I was reading this account, right, where the Mi'kmaq up in, what was that, Cape Breton to Newfoundland is what they call, well, is what it's called now. I'm not too sure what the names are, but it's like 60 miles across, like open salt water. And, you know, there's an island 15 miles off from the shore, and they would, you know, the entire family would paddle to that island, and then the strongest paddlers would paddle the remaining 50 miles across that strait, and then on the calmest night, they would ignite a bonfire, so the people all the way back on that island would be able to see the glow on the horizon, and it'd be the calmest night, so they would make that crossing. So there's a lot of history like that that I think about, and you know, the fact that we're still getting out in the salt water, we're still getting out, you know, with our people is, you know, super, like I've been saying, it's super empowering.
Yeah, well, I can assure you, regarding scheduling, the Ancestors Paddle is always always the second weekend of August. starting on the Friday. Yeah, the Friday. And for listeners who aren't sure what the Ancestors paddle is that I'm referring to, every year, for the past many, many years, the Passamaquoddy community organizes the Passamaquoddy Ancestral Canoe Paddle, where we put in at our sister reservation of Madocmiguk, or otherwise known as Indian Township, and we go across the freshwater there, the lakes in the surrounding area, on the Skudik River over to saltwater, and then finish the next day. It's a day-long trip at our other sister reservation, Zibayig, where we're greeted by the community. And yeah, Damon was there last year, and it keeps getting bigger every year. It's like last year we said, oh, this is the most paddlers we've ever had. And the year before that, we said that as well. Now we said it. I'm probably going to say it again this year. So it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And is any flat water or any more racing coming up for you?
So the Whitewater series is pretty much wrapped up.
Yeah.
There is one race called the Millinocket Xtreme. It's on the Millinocket Stream. It's super fun. There's a really long section of rapids. The longest section of rapids in the whole series. It's called Turtle Pit Rapid, and that's a good one. And I'm racing that with my partner Hannah, and that's gonna be fun because Hannah is such a strong paddler. I'm excited for that. And I think that's the last whitewater race, and then the flatwater kicks off this summer. So that's when we really spend the most time with the kids. And a little plug too, the Orno paddlers have their Thursday night races. I think they start in August, and those are a lot of fun. It's a great community. They bring out these big 12-person war canoes, so anyone can come and they can jump in a boat and they can race, and it's it's always pretty chill. There's always someone really trying hard, and there there's people kind of hanging out. Like they bring out the international students from the UMaine, and nice. We bring out all the kids. And I remember growing up, we'd go to those races, and that's how I got into canoe racing too, is going to those. And because of John Neptune really brought us into all of that, which I'm really grateful for.
Yeah.
And I remember we'd go out to eat after, like, and we still do that. It's like a tradition. We'll go get food after, and that's it brings us all closer, together.
Yeah, and this is talking like beyond like Indigenous and non-Indigenous paddlers.
Yeah,
as
absolutely.
Well. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Could you say more about those relationships with,
Yeah, so I went to Orno High School, and I joined the canoe team there, and their canoe team is whitewater focused, right? So we do all the whitewater races, and that's coached by Jeff Owen. And Jeff Owen is the most knowledgeable person on whitewater that I know. Like the way his skill, he goes so much faster in whitewater than I've ever seen anyone go. Like there was a race on the Piscataquis that we were doing, and me and Ben were in a tandem boat, and Jeff was right next to us the whole time. But as soon as we hit the whitewater, he just pulled away, and we were trying to catch up to him too. So there's a lot of knowledge, a lot of amazing people out here that really support us, and there's definitely some interesting dynamics in the canoe race scene, which, the way I see it is a lot of people don't really understand the how real this is for us and how powerful it is. For a lot of people, it's just like, I'm gonna go race, like, rah. It's very, it's kind of insufferable, but it's all love for the most part.
I think you're going to run into that no matter what sport you choose. There's probably going to be some of those tryhards everywhere.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot I could say, but I'm biting my tongue right now.
All good.
No worries.
Yeah.
Don't want to get you in trouble.
More trouble. No,
right, more trouble.
Yeah, again, it's like a lot of these things that, that quote unquote Maine is like known for, or that is a form of recreation or a form of just competition for people. It's like really is deeper for people who have been here for, you know, since time immemorial, or if you follow the archaeological record, you know, for more than 13,000 years, it's like, when you put it in that perspective, like, imagine how many of our canoes have touched the water.
I think about this too, like, the different families in their canoes, like, how they would decorate and how they would do their etchings, and you would tell, like, oh, that's a Neptune canoe.
Yeah.
That's a Francis's canoe.
Mm-hmm.
That paddle right there, that's the way Stanley would carve his paddle. You know, it's like, that is kind of what, like, there's a lot of things that have been lost to time, and whenever I'm out in the water, I like to think about those stories, the songs that were sung, mm-hmm. the conversations, the tears and the anger and the blood and all of this that's kind of been forgotten. You can still kind of, I don't know, you can definitely still feel the presence of it. The land carries our energy, and we can, you know, if we like stop and we slow down, we can feel it.
Mm-hmm. And if you stop going out and doing it,
you lose it.
Yeah, that's just like, yeah, you just gotta go in a lot of ways. Sometimes it just takes showing up and doing it. And
absolutely,
again, like, that's something that I respect of, like, seeing a lot of people, you know, in these spaces, and is that they show up and take that responsibility. And we're coming up on our time here with each other. I wish we could do have you ever heard of the, like, hide the paddle ceremony?
No.
It's might be just within the Passamaquoddy communities, but I've heard, I might have also read about it, of when communities would come and visit our homelands, we would have this thing where we would hide their paddles so they couldn't leave.
I have heard that. The women would take the paddles, right? Like,
Yeah. But unfortunately, we are on a time limit, and I can't do that. But I do want to thank you again, Damon, for sitting down and talking with us. I think you've been our youngest guest. Is that correct?
Yes.
Big time.
So yeah, it's just such a nice sitting down with. Well, I'm younger too. People around my generation. Sorry, Nick.
You're so old.
I am. I do
want to, like, give some airtime too for anything that you just want to end or share that we may have not talked about or touched upon in our conversation.
Get out on the water. Reach out. Let's go for a paddle.
Sounds good. And, well, you know, is there anywhere people can get in contact with you that you'd like to share? You know, no pressure, but.
You can find me. You can find me somewhere.
Just go out in the water.
Out on the boat.
Yeah, go find me on the river.
All right. I just want to thank you to our listeners for joining us on Dawnland Signals. Much thank you to our volunteer technician, Scarlett Tudor, for her assistance and support.
Hey, Scarlett.
Thank you, Scarlett. Be sure to join us next month on July 7th and every first Tuesday of the month for Dawnland Signals and more conversations of truth, healing, and change. Stay tuned for more great programming here on WERU-FM. Upchgudj gnomiopa.
Upchgudj.